Music, it's not just part of our daily lives, it's part of our wrestling fandom as well, and it has been for decades. That's where this show comes in. Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling, hosted by Andrew Rich. Hey, that's me. Each episode delivers a different topic with a variety of great guests, fun conversations, musical analysis, and of course, a heartfelt pun or two. New episodes drop every other Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Check out Music of the Mat only on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for April 16th, 2024. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you would like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red boxes that sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. It's one of your hosts, it's your old pal Mike Spears, joining alongside, as always, Case Slow. And Case, as we were kind of like talking, getting into this, it is April now and like everything is happening. How are you doing? How is Freckles doing? How have you been, buddy?
I'm good. My dog is good. Thank you for asking. We had a nice few days of recovery here. Some good progress has been made on that front. So hopefully by the time we talk next week, which will be a little later, I think we're recording next Thursday, if my memory serves correct. Hopefully by then, everything will be back to normal. And if we're lucky, maybe we get two or three episodes out in the next 2 weeks. So look forward to that. But no, I am well. I am shocked by the calendar as well. I'm shocked that it's set our live season. How are you, my friend?
You know, it's something where we were talking about how Texas weather makes everything kind of different. And it's a completely different calendar that I operate under, like right now, especially like Texas wedding season, at least, is like partially over. And we were talking about how, at least in Texas, because no one wants to have a summer wedding when it's 110 degrees out, people just disappear. And it is very kind of funny, like hearing like, oh, yeah, no, we're going to go on vacation in Portugal for a month. We're not going to talk about this one specific wedding vendor. I'm like, oh. Must be nice. But, you know, it's been an interesting time. It's one of those things, bud, that, like, as we kind of, like, this week in Dragon Gate has been one of, like, I feel like the biggest weeks of Dragon Gate's year, and it's coming off of the WrestleMania week. And you just look down, and we are 3 weeks away from Dead or Alive, and we're starting to see the Big Show and Aichi kind of making shape, especially after this Rey de Parejas closeout show, the Corcoran Hall show that happened on the 10th. We'll be talking about that, as well as a fun weekend in Hakata and Dragon Gate kind of turning form and getting a lot of attention on this Rey de Parejas final. But, okay, so you had the overall written review on voicesofwrestling.com. You're saying that this is like one of the best Dragon Gate shows of the 2020s.
That's right. Well, and I think, you know, you hit something right on the head there, at least for the sake of our audience and the purpose of this is, you know, you're exactly right. Coming out of Mania and coming off that ETU show to put forth the week they had, not only with the Corcoran Hall show, but with some real standout stuff in Fukuoka over the weekend. I mean, this is this is everything you would want, you know, for a promotion that seemingly over the last, I would say, 3 years, you could really market it Dead or Alive 2021 or Final Gate 2020. You know, it's a lot of one step forward, two steps back. The wrong guy gets injured at the wrong time. The match that should click doesn't click the way that you would think it would. Guys leave and go to other promotions. There is an overwhelming sense of momentum right now, which is largely a foreign concept in this promotion. And it's really nice to see because you have not only just the sheer quality of show that happened in Tokyo, and then again, the high points from Fukuoka were higher than they normally are in that building. You have the stuff with Jason and Jackie that feels very, very hot right now. Monte, I think, after what I still detest to be just an awful way to start his reign, when you start to think about the last 4 months, you know, January onwards from Bayside in January through now, all right, Monte is really establishing himself as a champion. You have this fascinating wrinkle with Valletta. You have whatever Gold Class is doing, which I think needs to be earmarked. And then you have all these healthy guys on the undercard. It's just, there's momentum here, and it's obvious, and you can feel it. There's some anecdotal crowd notes that I think are worth noting as we go throughout here. It's just, it feels very good. And I want to talk more about the shows of the 2020s in just a second, but I'm going to kick it back to you for your big picture thoughts.
Yeah, it's something where I think with the way that they've figured out their schedule this year, you add it in Gate at Bayside, you now have this open void between your first real big weekend of the year coming at the end of February, the big weekend in Osaka. And now you have much more of a full schedule where this 2 month period case, you know, you remember years past where it felt like we were doing Road to Dead or Alive cage match stuff in March.
Oh my God. I mean, they tour Valletta's entrance right now, you know, it would just be, all right, we're going to hit it in Kobe and Fukuoka and we'll do a house show here. And, you know, I've always been on record for whatever reason, especially when the units are a little more diverse in those cage matches, I can't get into the mixed bag Road to Dead or Alive 6-man tags, but we don't have to worry about this year because one, I think the Road to matches have been pretty hot. And two, there's momentum. There was a purpose in March that fed into April, and April's going to lead into May, and it's very exciting.
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, like, what we have to recognize here is the fact that Dragon Gate has spent the last 2 years kind of figuring out what they want their calendar to be like, and it is something where it used to be one of the most regimented promotions in the world, where maybe outside of CMLL case, we know that first week in May is the first big show. July, somewhere in July, usually either the last week or the first week, biggest show of the year. August in Tokyo, October and into November in Osaka, and you close out the year in Fukuoka. It was a very regimented schedule where the tournament was always right before the big show in July, and then you had a tag tournament right afterwards, but it showed its age for so many years. And now I feel like we can take a step back and at least see how they've evolved the schedule into this way that as you're talking about, we are 3 weeks away from Dead or Alive. We essentially have 2 weeks of network shows, and then it is cage time in Aichi. But I think that we have to kind of like acknowledge how smart it's been and how much of a home run, at least right now, the new schedule has been in 2024.
Well, and especially if they're able to keep Bayside fresh and relevant, because that is not only just a nice addition to have a big show in January, which they had never really had before, but it's also, it's a business play. You know, it's Kai's hometown. It is Strong Machine J's hometown. Am I correct in that?
Right. And Tien's.
Yes, and Tien Revolution. So, you know, that's one of those that as long as that show feels important, they really hit the ground running. I mean, Mike, think about in years past where if Champion Gate at the beginning of March, if that show in that weekend, if they aren't loaded, then we're really talking about waiting until May for things to pick up. And they've just completely eradicated that from the schedule. And you're right. That's been a very, very smart move on their behalf.
And it's something where you then have the big change has been having this tag team tournament that last year was January and February, really kicked off the year. Now it's found this position after that big weekend in Osaka, well after Gate of Bayside, this usual kind of dead time that's just touring, frankly. And we've seen, I feel like in a way, this tournament rise up and take over a position of the schedule that was just absolutely gone for the better part of half a decade. It was something where the tag team tournament, the last few years of Summer Venture Tag League, was doing much more damage to the roster and more particularly to whoever was the Dreamgate champion at that time.
Think about the way Summer Adventure Tag League petered out, because we'll talk about it in a little bit. I think very highly of 2014, but I had to Google just now who won 2015, and it was Susumu and Kness in the Jimmy pairing. And then 2016, which was an odd one because they ran Shinjuku face because Corkin was under construction, but that was a drink and an Eita vanity tournament, and it was, you know, a lot of Doi and Yashi and that Yoshino and T-Hawk team, and Ben was a young boy, but Ben got hurt, so we didn't really get to see all of his stuff. It just, you know, it ended on such a whimper. But I'll say this. I mean, unless King of Gate, and this isn't really a knock, there's no sense for this to be competition, but just personally, you know, unless King of Gate is otherworldly this upcoming summer, when the calendar flips over to 2025, I'll be more excited about Rey de Parejas than I will be King of Gate. And that really says something. The excellent job they've done over the last 2 years with this tournament.
Yeah, and it's something where, in a way, where King of Gate has been solidifying the roster, and that's really kind of the anointing tournament for someone. Last year, it was finally Kota Minora, achieving a singles goal rather than declaring it himself. This tag tournament now, 2 years in, I think we could probably talk more about what happened on Corkwin. We come out of the tournament with a finals of Yamato Susumu versus Team No Hug, Dragon Kid and Naruki Doi. Easily becomes one of the best Dragon Gate tag team matches of the last 5 years. Something where, as much as I adored last year's Rey de Parejas finals, I think that this was much more closer to what we would consider classic Twin Gate wrestling than anything that they have done in the last 5 years, maybe outside of the Shun Monte Kung Fu Masters match at Kobe World.
Well, let me put it this way, and I have a ton to say about the in-ring itself, but one final point, just overall looking at the show itself and the tournament, the success of Rey de Parejas can simply be marked by the fact that I'll go first and share my list, because I didn't tell you we'd have a list ready, but I want you to think about this as I'm talking. I compiled what I thought were the five best Dragon Gate shows from the pandemic until now. So anything after Champion Gate 2020, and I'll go chronologically here, because I don't necessarily have an order of these in mind, but I would certainly have on the list, I would have Fantastic Gate 2021, the December 1st, 2021 show that not only had Ishii Nihashi, Naruki Doi, Riki Hashi, and Takashi Yoshida versus Haien, which I remember being really, really strong. It also had Kento versus Kamei for the Brave Gate belt in the semi-main, and then obviously Dia Inferno and Diamante versus Dragon Dia and Shun Skywalker in the mask versus mask match. I would have that. I would have Kobe World 2021 from that summer. I think the first show, and maybe this is just because I reviewed it, so I'm partial to it, I like the first show more than the Yoshino retirement show that had Minora versus Eita, Dia, Jason, and Estrella versus Dia Inferno, Diamante, and SB Kento. It had Dragon Kid, Kagetora, Yamato, Naruki Doi, and Ultimo versus Agan Isu and Masato Yoshino, Shimizu and Susumu versus Kaito Ishida and Kazuma Sakamoto, and then Shun Skywalker versus KZ. I would put Gate of Destiny 2022 on that list. That was the first cheering show we had back from the pandemic. That was Eita versus Fujiwara, Dia and Kakuta versus Shimizu and Strong Machine J, Ishin Kai and Shun Skywalker versus Mochi, Mochi Jr. and Susumu Mochizuki, and then Yuki Oshioka versus Yamato. I would have last year's Rey de Parejas opening show, not the closing show, but the opening show I thought was just a tad stronger. And then King of Gate 2023 from last year, the opening night in Korakuen with KZ versus Eita, Shimizu versus Skywalker, Kakuta versus Mochi, and a really fun old guys versus M3K tag on that show as well. So I would certainly put this Korakuen Hall show on the level of all those shows. And honestly, outside of maybe Gate of Destiny 2022 and maybe that December Korakuen, I would put this show right at the top of the list.
Yeah, I think it's something where this is something that the crowds are finally... It's interesting how we kind of lump in the clap crowd era within like the 2022 ons, but it took a while for Dragon Gate audiences really to get back in with it. It is something where I know Jay has talked about how there's been fan turnover, just like the usual aging out of fans and newer fans coming in there. But it's something that, like, for me, when I'm like looking at least outside of big event shows, where I think that for me, when I look at big event shows, I do think that they more often than not were not necessarily as complete as the just the monthly Cork wins or the Outpost shows that you're just talking six matches and there's just not a whole lot of downtime. You're just kind of getting with that. But it's something where now we have, and maybe it's just simply you put two members of the original Big Six and then Dragon Susumu in the main event. The crowd is going to know these guys. It seems like everything is kind of turning on in a way that a lot of those shows in the last 5 years just have not been able to. If it's just COVID restrictions, if it's just reduced capacity, or if it's the fact that it's a fan base that's not used to having to make noise at Albiance, or also wrestlers who are not used to having to try to garner that, as in like their pacing and matches.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was wrong. I thought when crowds came back, which we're talking February of 2023 for the most part, I thought they would hit the ground running. I thought shows would sound like they did 10 years prior. And I was wrong, because what we learned was in Dragon Gate specifically, there was so much turnover, as there always is with this promotion. But, you know, people might have come in 2021 or, you know, 2022, and their experience going to a wrestling show was just vastly different than the people that had maybe been there since 2016. But I don't think it's a case, in terms of what I saw over the last week, it's not just Doi and Dragon Kid and Yamato and Susumu being in a main event, because the point that I wanted to make about the crowds was, you know, Kamei has such command of this crowd right now. And I feel like if I turned on a show from even last December, you know, December 2023 to now, the vocal response for Kamei, the vocal response for Shun, the vocal response for Jason Lee, and the vocal response for Strong Machine J, I feel like those guys, even though a lot of them, you know, Shun and Kamei especially, were already positioned very highly on the card, I think they've gone up a level in terms of the response they're getting. And this crowd has a different atmosphere than it did even 6 months ago. I mean, there's a noticeable change happening here. And I think it's a combination of, one, guys simply just getting over more than they were, and two, I think people have started to figure it out. I hope people have started to figure it out that, okay, you know, this is what you do at a wrestling show, which, again, I just thought it would be instinct. But as it turned out, it was not.
And I think a little bit also, you take a look at how Dragon Gate acts get the crowd behind them to start off. And I think that it kind of took at least a little bit to form the engagement and interaction. It took your Kota Minoras finally realizing, oh, I should probably go do something with Golden Roses with the crowd and engender support that way. But I think having Hyo kind of, I just think about how much time, like, you just kind of have to eat up on Dragon Gate shows. It's something where it's above like the percentage of error of a Dragon Gate show is spent waiting for Hyo to get all of his Hyo bucks and be able to take care of that. But I think being able to finally get past the barrier basically between clapping and like distance and being able to kind of foster that level of interaction. And I think the fact that we kind of get to see crowds really kick up, and you brought up Kamei's role in that, I think a lot of that also has to go with Hyo as well.
That's right. Hyo should have been mentioned in that conversation.
Yeah, but it's something where I feel like it's these two guys in concert kind of in a way making this work, where you have Hyo doing the kind of like the innate, like, okay, kissing babies, you know, shaking hands, all that, whereas Kamei has been doing just heavy on the melodrama.
Can I give you a galaxy brain take?
Oh, please do.
This is half baked. I'm not fully prepared to say this. I also don't think they're doing it intentionally. I just think this is pure coincidence, but pure Galaxy Brain, really, really nerdy statement. I think Hyo and Jackie Funky Kame are, in a weird way, doing Toriumon X better than Toriumon X ever did. When you draw the parallels, Hyo being this promotion's Magnum Tokyo, and Kame between the charisma and the in-ring ability being this promotion's Shima. I think we're starting to figure that out. And then if you want to throw somebody in the Suwa role, I think you have Shun Skywalker gladly filling those shoes. I just think there are familiar archetypes here that intentionally or not, and I really don't know. I think they have hit on just some classic Dragon Gate things where an audience of any age that's going to be attracted to this product no matter what, now they're going like, oh, okay, Hyo's a male stripper. I'm in. I understand what this concept is.
And if we further kind of want to take this to another galaxy, what's the thing I've been saying about Jackie Funky Kame the entire time he's been Natural Vibe?
Oh, please tell.
He has been kind of put at the learning tree behind some of the greatest like crowd work people in wrestling today. He got to understudy under Genki Horiguchi for 2 years, KZ ever since that. And that's like being a part of a promotion that has that Magu and Shima dichotomy happening at the same time too. So you've kind of, in a way, you've basically empowered someone, be like, all right, you've seen our history now. You've understudied like the guy who has made his career in this company based off of his crowd work in Genki Horiguchi.
Well, and Genki and KZ, and I think he has to be mentioned here because he came into Vibes around the same time as Kame, but he has the seniority. I think Shimizu also has to be on that list, and that is maybe just my reoccurring thought that historically Shimizu is so underrated. In terms of crowd connection, not a lot of guys are better than him at getting a reaction.
Oh yeah, and I mean, you think about someone like Shimizu, who you want to talk about over the COVID era. They've basically proven that not only is he able to form this thing, he's able to basically be the most Teflon person possible because he's able to do some of the most comedy gimmick stuff possible, like career, like lane defining, like you do this, you end up kind of in this one lane that's the lane that Kikataru goes down. He and the Bokumo Dragon stuff was just preparing him down that future that. A future that's a bumper, that's a bowling alley that has bumpers out there. The ball is going to hit the pins, right? But he's shown the resilience that he became the main character of the fall. And I think that, Shimizu has to be added into the mix of the important teachers for Kame as well.
I'm with you. So let's talk about this main event. Let me do this real quick. Can we do spoiler-free match recommendations for the entire weekend?
Okay. Yep. Nope. Let me get my remarkable notebook up with you because I have a lot of stuff for the Hakata shows as well.
Okay, So let me throw a list of matches at you and then you fill in the blanks with anything that you think I missed, okay?
I think that's the right way to handle this. Go right ahead.
Look, Cork and Hall, you got to watch the Rey de Parejas semifinals matches, Susumu and Yamato versus Shimizu and Strong Machine J, and No Hug versus Big Hug. I also think on that show, you got to watch D-Courage and Daiki Yanagiuchi versus Gold Class and Rhea Fuda. That match was really, really good, especially the Kakuta and Fuda stuff in that match. That was really exciting stuff. Toru Washi and Ultimo Dragon versus Gianni Valletta and Kai. You might turn your nose up at it on paper, but that is well worth your time, as is Zebrats, Ishin, Jason Lee, and Shun Skywalker versus Kame, KZ, and UT. And then, of course, the finals of the Rey de Parejas tournament. That is from the Korakuen show. On the Fukuoka shows, the day show, I really would only recommend this main event, and I would recommend this main event strongly, the 8-man tag Captain's Fall elimination match with Zebrats and Natural Vibes. And then on the evening show, I think you got to watch Strong Machine J versus Masaki Mochizuki. You got to watch Dragon Kid, Naruki Doi, Susumu, Yokosuka, and Yamato versus Natural Vibes, Shimizu, Kame, KZ, and UT. And why not? Watch the main event because you're already there. Valletta and Skywalker versus Big Hug. Those would be my recommendations.
So if you want to go sicko mode, I have some more stuff I would add on to it.
Please.
I actually really like the daytime show. I thought that the Hakata daytime show was one of their best shows they've had in that building. The Captain's Fall is the thing that if you have time for a little bit of wrestling in your, you've allotted so much for Dragon Gate, Captain's Fall is essential. If you still have a little bit of time and you already have the network up, I like the Gold Class versus the We Are Veteran Gun Returns match. I thought that six-man tag was a lot of fun. I was not notebook on it, but I was right next to that. I thought that that was a blast as well. Like, I will co-sign Strong Machine J and Mochizuki, basically the last three matches there that they had in Hakata. And, you know, Kunimoto was not... It was an interesting YouTube weekend. They did Kunimoto and Oita. And the thing about Oita is that they have these... they have FTO, which is like a micro indie that they help promote with.
Yeah.
Did you see this, the one that went up this afternoon?
No, I haven't seen any of the YouTube stuff. I spent my afternoon catching up on Noah, which I have not done in a while. That is a promotion that, outside of Kaito Kiyomiya, is not for me right now. And Kiyomiya, I think, is doing the best work of his career. So, no, I've missed all the YouTube stuff.
Okay, so Strong Machine J, I'm trying to get this guy's name right. Strong Machine J has this match and on the Upload the Goat that went up today. Against Koyoya Ozaki, Okazaki, it is stiff. It is hard hitting. It's like 10 minutes.
Okay.
It is worth your while. If you want to get see someone just kind of like just Slumlords versus Strong Machine J, who is actually, he has that kind of energy. He could be doing those shows with Kenichiro Arai, and he could fit in there very
well. Oh my God, yeah, absolutely.
But it's something where when we talk about this Korakuen, we only are leaving essentially one match off.
Like, yes, and that match was fine. It just, yeah. You know, what I would not deem it essential.
No. That's 3.25. That's good. And you can go along your day.
Yeah, very much so. And that was the Mochi, Fuji, and Kagetora versus Tamanaga, Kondo, and Kanda match, which, again, it was fine. But they just beat up Punch for 10 minutes. And we've all seen that before.
Yeah, it's something where it's just like Mochi was just kind of, you know, keeping his timing up, I would say.
Very much so. So that's a lot of bouncing around. Talk shows of the 2020s, which, again, I would put this one, obviously, with those match recommendations, I would put this right near the top of the list, if not the top of the list. Good in-ring stuff from Korakuen and Fukuoka, big picture-wise. Mike, let's hone in on this main event, Rey de Parejas 2024 Finals. Spoilers commencing now, as it was Yamato and Susumu versus Team No Hug of Dragon Kid and Naruki Doi. We get Doi and Dragon Kid, just as I predicted when we first previewed this tournament, coming out as your victors. Your thoughts on this Twin Gate match, Mike? Go ahead.
It is something where, like, this tournament, and especially like these two teams being in the finals, it is like this. I'm trying to think of like a proper like athletic kind of thing, but it is something where actually it's more or less like when you have someone like Walton Goggins and he shows up on the first day of Vice Principals, and you go like, I don't know about this, and then you realize, oh my God, of course, Walton Goggins makes perfect sense that he works well with Danny McBride. Like that's how things should be. Dragon Kid should be a great tag team partner to Naruki Doi, even though they've never tagged before. Susumu Yokosuka and Yamato barely have been in the same units as each other, let alone tagged. And it is something where these guys just like, it was almost like, okay, it is the idea of when they wanted to do the NBA draft all-star games, what they really wanted it to be. Case.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Where it's like, okay, that you have team LeBron and you had team Chris Paul. And it's like, okay, these two guys, they're going to pick great teams. Like they're going to be able to make this work here. No, that this is what this match is what those all-star games should have been.
I'm with you, and I guess I got to ask, and I get the feeling I know your thought just judging off of that, but I saw some chatter about this, and I don't necessarily think they're wrong to at least ask this question, but your thoughts on it being the two oldest teams in the tournament being the ones that are in the finals when Dragon Gate, obviously, you know, throughout their entire history, but especially the last 2 years, has been youth, new. They turn back the clock here. What are your thoughts on that? Is it an indictment towards the Reiwa generation?
No, because the Reiwa generation is going to be in the main event at Dead or Alive, all in the cage. Like, it's something that I think it's smart having this set up where last year it was Susumu and Kanda. This year it's these four. Like, even though there's fan turnover, you have to serve your long-term fans, right? Like, there are people who have been going to Corcoran Hall for a Yamato for the better parts of 14 years. And even though you have taken the focus off of him, it's not like he suddenly got bad. It's not like he suddenly became weak. It's not like that he is not still the five-time former Open the Dreamgate champion.
That's right.
So I feel like that you're able to do this, especially, I think Dead or Alive this year, like right now, it's in this very fascinating thing where, like, we essentially know what should be all the title matches on the show, unless, like, something happens and Hio drops a direct fall over the next few weeks, right? Like,
yeah, I wouldn't
anticipate. And that's exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
Every single Hio and Big Hug match right now, I have my eye on it. So I'm going like, oh, Hio's in the cage, but he still does not have a Brave Gate match. And Dead or Alive, if you have multiple things to do on that show, they will make you do that. If you have two title matches, ask Dragon Daya how that goes for you.
Like, that's a great point.
It's because you have like this the seniors, I don't know, this is the fifth version of Team Veteran we've had, K-Space. Like, I'm excited to see what they're going to name it. Like, I feel like you have to do something brand new at this point. Like, I feel like We Are Team Veteran is too Shima-pilled at this point. Like, we need to differentiate this. We can't have any William Tell Overture, like, doing any of this. But it's smart that you have now this new veteran army that's able to, like, fill up that point of going, like, okay, it's the Kiyomi and Alejandro match. I do think it's something where Kaito Kiyomiya, I have looked at some of like his interviews coming out of Korakuen Hall, and he's going like, why is it that every company has someone like Naruki Doi who's just going to come out here and give me a hard time?
Man. Let's put a pin in that, because I want to talk about the match, but we got to talk about the post-match promo. There's really not an argument to be made that these teams shouldn't have been in the final, because if you want to lump in the young guys, you know, Gold Class, Minoru and Ben, they finished with 1 point. They already had their match against Kiyomiya and Alejandro. They did that at Final Gate. And I put an asterisk next to that 1 point, because I can't help but feel like Gold Class is going to do something big within the near future here.
Right, yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, you also have the fact that now we can clearly say the Kota Minoru losing streak, like all that stuff that was happening over WrestleMania weekend, is considered canon. He has an intercontinental slide happening right now. And at what point does Ben say, like, bro, you're the leader here? Like, the there's a real existential crisis happening in Gold Class that outside natural vibes, they're the unit that has to figure themselves out quick.
Very much so. And then in vibes, you know, Shimizu and Strong Machine J, they went to the semifinals. I think they told a story there and makes sense why they're not in the finals. It wasn't going to be Owashi and Kondo. Wasn't going to be Kai and Valetta. Obviously, wasn't going to be the Ryukyu Dragon team in the B block. It's like, all right, Big Hug went to the semifinals. It makes no sense for them to win. They've got other stuff to do on Dead or Alive. Wasn't going to be Daya and Kakuta, because you at some point would think that it's going to be Daya and Yoshioka taking the belts off of Kiyomiya and Alejandro. You've got KZ and UT. I mean, look, those aren't young guys. You know, that's 2006 and 2013 for your debuts there. They're not Reiwa generation. Jason and Jackie, no longer a team. And then Shun and Ishin, you know, they were factors in their block, but again, they have bigger and better things to do on that show. So you're left with the natural conclusion, and this is the point I made when we previewed it, was like, hey, not only is Dragon Kid and Doi a really good pairing for Alejandro and Kiyomiya, but these are the guys that make sense when you look at the way that in most of these teams, it's either guys that are irrelevant or guys that are too relevant. They have bigger things to do than a Twin Gate match, which is not said lightly. It's just the reality of it. So right. you have to main event with these guys, and then you watch the quality of the match, and it's like, oh my God, of course you main event with these guys.
Yeah, and you have the little added bonus that I don't remember us talking about this, because we didn't know when the Rey de Parejas winners were going to face off against Kiyomi and Alejandro. But Case, where is Dead or Alive?
That is in Dragon Kid's hometown of Nagoya, Aichi, Japan.
Yep, and what do they love doing in Nagoya?
Beating Dragon Kid.
So there we go. And they like beating him in important matches. So,
oh, it's tradition. Yeah, so it's what they do there.
Yeah, so now you get the add-in of, hey, Doi. We're going to get into that. But it's turned into kind of like this masterstroke where they're going to be accomplished. They're going to be trying to pull off so many different things over that Dead or Alive show that, like, go and have your tag team, like, your tag team classicists in the Twin Gate division. Give it to Doi and Dragon Kid, and especially after a tournament where we see these guys just, even before the finals, probably them and Yamato and Zasubu were the best teams in tournament by stars, I would say, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you have this match where, I mean, I said this in my review, but God, it's like they worked it for the Tokyo Dome. You know, it started so slow and transformed into such an epic by the end of it. And it left me, you know, yes, being appreciative of Yamato and yes, being appreciative of Susumu and Dragon Kid. But Mike, I mean, I remember when we did Greatest Wrestler Ever in 2021 with Alan, and one of my late additions to my ballot, and it ended up being in the mid-80s, was I finally talked myself into having Naruki Doi represented. And it was kind of one of those where it's like, man, you know, I've got 10 Dragon Gate guys, you know, at just 10% of my ballot need to be Dragon Gate guys. Spoiler alert, yes, and it'll probably be more by the next time I do it. But now, given the last year, or really two, that Doi has had, it's close to 2.5 years, I mean, this is not only one of the single greatest tag team wrestlers we have ever seen, he is so confidently, in my opinion, one of the 100 greatest wrestlers to ever exist, and I think Doi might be doing the best work of his career right now. Think about the way, and it really comes to fruition in this match, think about the way that he has rehabbed his image from when he went freelance in 2022, and we really weren't sure if he was going to have a Toru Owashi-like career from that point where he would do DDT and he would do some comedy and he would be, you know, a fun name from the past, but not really anything relevant. Think about what he has become, where he's become this kingpin of the All Japan Junior division. He does DDT stuff, and at his peak, it's very, very good. But he has reinvigorated himself in Dragon Gate more so than any other promotion. And seeing what he did in this match, seeing the energy that Doi steps into the ring with every single time he steps into the ring, it's the thing where if I was in the back right now and I was a Saito or a Genki or anybody with any sort of influence and power on the younger generation,
if you're in the room.
Yeah, exactly. I would make sure that every Doi match going forward is a curtain sellout, that every young guy is watching this and going, this is the way that we need to attack every single time we have a match like this, because Doi is just on another level right now. And I thought his performance individually compared to what the other three did was just on another level.
And it's something that I think that when we talk about Doi, he is someone that I think that maybe over the last 5 years, and some of that was us revisiting some of his 2009 and 2010 output in the DGUSA series. But we got to see like little glimpses then of a kind of genius that I feel like within the last 36 months. And really, I felt like going into COVID, like I am so bummed that his Dreamgate run ended up being that Dreamgate run. Because at that time in 2020, like going into COVID, everything was turning on for Naruki Doi.
He was my wrestler of the year in 2020. But, and then it just disappeared. And he had 2 years there where he had the neck issue, and it seemed like he had kind of exhausted himself creatively and physically. And I was like, well, you know, if the Dreamgate run is the last thing we get from Doi, then great. You know, one hell of a career. Let me pat you on the back. But I can't get over how good he is in 2024.
And it's something where having him be the partner to Dragon Kid, I think, like, if we really kind of want to really get into why we find this match maybe more special than others, it is something where for 20 years, essentially, I would say since 2004, so for 20 years, we have seen Naruki Doi kind of work around and figure out just kind of the ideal of tag team wrestling. We got to see the early part of Blood Generation until Doi Yoshi really became a concern. he was discovering himself. That's part of the Open the Brave Gate tournament episode we did, was about the story of Naruki Doi going and making a name for himself and taking the ring by any means necessary. And then we get to see him take that into a tag team with Masato Yoshino, where it was speed muscle, and it's not just a fun way to make fun of Rich for confusing them with Manabu Nakanishi. It is
good the fact
that you have you have speed and you have muscle, and Naruki Doi's role in those teams were to be the explosive hot tag, to be the person that comes in and clears out everything and sets up Masato Yoshino to do the double teams, where it's a lot of Doi having to be that extra strong hand. And of course those skills would apply here, you know, like, of course Naruki Doi would end up being such a great Dragon Kid tag team partner. If anything, you've taken the one person who was the hot tag to one of the better baby faces in peril the last 25 years, and then you take someone who's even better at that.
Yeah. I mean, it was set up great because you got to see Susumu work over Dragon Kid's legs for the first portion of the match. And that's exactly what you want. And then, yeah, I mean, again, Doi just comes in, and now we're talking about a historically great team with Speed Muscle, a historically great team with Yama Doi. And while I don't think this is the direction they're going to go, Mike, if they win at Dead or Alive and they get an extended run, let's say they have the Twin Gate belts from Dead or Alive to even Dangerous Gate, do you have any doubt that by years in, we would look at them as one of the best tag teams on the planet? I mean, they're already there now just through this tournament alone.
Yeah, and I mean, we were people 4 weeks ago talking about Kung Fu Masters were the tag team of 2024 because of what they had up until the end of the tag team tournament. Now we got a new team in the catbird seat, man. And this is something where, I mean, you look at how this promotion has kind of changed over the last, 24 months, and there's a lot of interesting pairs in the company and outside the company. I feel like then you'd be able to have opportunities for if No Hug goes that far. I'm still with you until we see Dragon Daya take a step forward with a partner that's not Yuki Yoshioka. I'm led to believe that they're still holding off for Yoshioka, but the second that happens, why not? Like, I think that this is they've created this team out of nothing. And I desperately don't want to see it end on May 5th.
Well, this is the beauty of this year's tournament. And it's why, you know, the scheduling and pacing of it was so odd that it started off hot. And then you had the first week of YouTube uploads where it was a lot of the B-block matches. And it was a lot of the good B-block matches. And then you had that third week where it was a lot of Valletta and Kai and the Ryukyu Dragon team and Gondo and Awashi. And it's like, okay, it petered out a little bit. But it ended so strong that I think you have to put this tournament as being better than last year's. And I loved last year's. But the main reason for that is coming out of this tournament, Kung Fu Masters are a tag team of the year contender, and they won't team again this entire year. Just from what they did from January 1 through March 31st, they have to be considered. You have this No Hug team. And you also now, you're building this catalog of big hug matches. And you cannot sleep on that because, you know, when the unit first started, it was like, all right, you know, we get what they're doing here. We're buying into the story so they work as a team because we know their friendship and we know their charisma and look at how over Hyo's getting. But now they're just becoming a well-oiled tag team. So you not only have just the sheer success of great matches and a fun time, but there's run out with this. You're getting more big hug and hopefully you're getting more no hug. And then you have the fallout of Kamei and Jason. So it was just a marvelous tournament all the way around, capped off by a match that I feel very comfortably, for as much as I loved Jason and Jackie versus Kiyomiya and Alejandro from Bayside, which I really, really do love that match. The Rey de Parejas Finals is my new Dragon Gate match of the year.
Yeah, and it's one of the ones where it's the first match since Kobe World 2022 where I had a thought of is this it? I almost went five. The thing is the second that I had that question, I was like, okay, it's 4 3/4, but we'll move on. But it's better than anything else in this company has done all year. And
I'll say this, I came pretty close to I feel very comfortable at 4 3/4. I feel very comfortable, but when Doi hit the Doi fives on the apron to Yamato, oh. I was like, all right, well, you know, maybe we bump up a quarter here. I don't know what's going on, but this really took it up a level because it reminded me, and I put this in my review, but it's the same spot that in the 2008 Summer Adventure Tag League, it's Speed Muscle versus Dragon Kid and Shingo, which I would say Dragon Kid and Shingo, a very similar team to this Dragon Kid and Doi team. But Doi does that spot on Dragon Kid, the Doi 5 from inside the ropes to the apron, and it looked just as nasty to Dragon Kid in 2008 as it did to Yamato in 2024.
Well, in 2024, Yamato basically just like slapped his hand on the apron to kind of slow himself down.
Well, because he fell like lead. I mean,
he just plummeted
to the ground.
It was something where over like the last 2 weeks, this roster has shown a propensity to really like taking bad from the floor, over the top rope to the floor bumps between this and Nakata. Yeah, just a whole bunch of psychopaths.
No, absolutely. I mean, this was a psychotic match. It's really, really worth your time. Again, just for the slow build. I mean, this is, I referenced it being like a Tokyo Dome tag match, but it's really, it almost has that like traditional Shima era Dreamgate structure to it where about 10 minutes in, you're invested in what they're doing, but you're not sure it's going to be a great match. And then all of a sudden, it is 0-60 in the most violent yet pleasing way possible. And the finishing stretch of this match, again, it's four masters of their craft. It's three guys who are comfortably some of the 100 greatest wrestlers to ever live in Yamato, and Yamato's no slouch either. So it was just a marvelous job all the way around.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio, and then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Yeah, it was something where I think that you walk away from this. And if we want to move on to the post-match, I'm ready to. But
yes, where Doi verbally shreds somebody who, and I say this with all due respect because I really like the work he's doing, but Doi shreds what's supposed to be a generational talent in a post-match promo.
Yeah. Getting called fifth rate. Doi calling that was something that I don't know if Jay translated. Like he was calling him a fifth rate champion partway through.
Yeah, no, it was Kiyomiya standing there while Alejandro did everything he could to essentially box out and stop the Doi momentum that was happening, but it was all for naught.
Look at my mask. I wore a Panther mask because Hyo's going to be here. And admirable chance. Like Alejandro knew what he had to dive on top of the grenade, but the grenade was already exploding.
No, this was 2014 Doi just ranting and raving. And, it's not surprising, and this really isn't even a dig at Kiyomiya. I don't want to frame it as that.
No, no.
It's the same thing that happened when Shingo went to New Japan. All the native New Japan fans were like, oh my god, he's the best talker in the promotion immediately, because this is the reputation that Dragon Gate has in Japan, is that they're just better talkers than everybody. And Kiyomiya, I don't think he was prepared for what he was stepping into the ring with. And so, this is anecdotal, but, you know, a lot of the native fans that I follow that morning, all they could talk about was like, this is the guy that Muto wanted to anoint. This is Noah's pet project. And for those 5 minutes, undoubtedly, Naruki Doi looked like the guy that if you were going to give me the description of, hey, this guy's been a hustler for 25 years, he's done this, this, and this, but the other guy is supposed to take Japan into the future, you would think I'm talking about Naruki Doi, judging from this promo.
Yeah, so it basically, I Doi brings up the fact that they don't even take the belts with them. Like, that they don't bring the belts out in Noah. They aren't actual teammates in Noah, of course. Kiyomiya is teaming with Ryohei Oiwa of New Japan,
which has been great. I will also say, I love Kiyomiya when he's not in Noah, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And then Doi bringing up, like, you are the worst champions ever, and we have to take care of this. And Doi is the person who made this belt. Like, that's something that I don't believe, like, Jay offered up. The first Summer Adventure Tag League, or one of the first ones, was to create the Open the Dragon Gate champions. Like, they took the money afterwards and made the belts, and another one, they unify this. This very much was seen as Doi's division. So he's basically telling, hey, you fucked up my belt, and I want it back now.
Absolutely. And, I think that's a great point and something that we can really look into as we go into Dead or Alive. It's just, that's right. If Yoshioka, for whatever reason, has a delay, it is not back from that eye injury that we all kind of thought he would be back by now, I would run with that. This is Doi saving the belt that he helped create. And I really like that angle of it.
Yeah. And it's something where that now provides us with the third match that was made for Dead or Alive from the show. Should we work back and talk about the cage match setup, Case?
Please.
So in the semi-main event of the show, we had Z Bratz, Ishin, Shun Skywalker, and debuting heel in Korakuen, Jason Lee versus Natural Vibes, Jackie Funky Kamei, KZ, UT. It goes to a DQ pretty much immediately in 3 minutes and 40 seconds when Jackie Funky Kamei starts attacking Kashi-chan with a chair. But this is after this was already restarted from a double count out. So nothing really was accomplished other than we got to see Jason's sweet new gear, and GM Ryo Saito comes out. And as a part of the brawl, and everything has been built up between Jason and Jack around scissors and hair. This brings out Hyo, and who does a save to try to prevent Z Bratz from shaving his head. And from there, we have a cage match from Ryo Saito. It's fleshed out since then, but the participants for the Steel Cage Survival are Hyo, Jackie Funky Kamei, Jason Lee, KZ, and Shun Skywalker. Mascara contra Mascara. Right now, what we do know is that KZ is also putting his membership/leadership of Natural Vibes.
We did a show with Jay right before Dead or Alive in 2022. Hint, hint, hopefully something to come for 2024 as well. And one of the points he made was, he's like, there's no cage match in Dead or Alive this year because there's no feud that warrants it. And in 2023, I would say it was the same thing. There is no doubt this has the feel of a necessary cage match. I think the Kamei and Jason stuff, I have no notes. I think it has been perfect. And it's especially great when you see, like, in Fukuoka, you know, Jason is wrestling with Z-Brats, but he's wrestling D-Courage. And he's wrestling as a heel, but he's wrestling as Jason. But when he and Kamei are in the ring with one another, they haven't really done moves outside of, you know, maybe countering a Torbolino here and there. It has been purely brawling ever since the Jason turn. And that is exactly how I would handle it. I thought this angle was so hot. I thought the way they drew it up with the first DQ, but then the restart, or I'm sorry, the count out, but then the restart, then the DQ. All of this to me, you know, it's perhaps childish and silly to give an angle a star rating, but I would give this like a 4.5 star angle. It was really, really that good.
Yeah, and I felt like that the Hyo edition provides that little element there of this very easily. And I mean, we knew that this cage match, if it were to happen at IHG, it was going to be some combination of Natural Vibes and Z-Brats. Has been moving that way for months before even Jason and Jack broke up. But having Hyo kind of come in there and being able to kind of, if not relitigate JFK turning him down, but keeping that as an open opportunity for Big Hug and Jackie Funky Kamei, like that is an X factor where I think that you can very easily now see, just from what we know right now, enough that the entire unit landscape will look different after May 5th.
We won't analyze this now. We've got a few weeks to talk about it, but we'll move on after I ask. Give me the name of the person you think is losing.
Oh, I think Jason's losing to Sarah.
Interesting. I think KZ is losing.
Oh, that would be a second cage match loss for him, too.
I know. We'll talk about that later. We'll let that marinate for a week and circle mm-hmm. back next week.
Yep, so that is the second match we had built up out of this April 10th Corquin Hall. But let's talk about Toru Iwashi's and Ultimo Dragon. They faced off against Johnny Valletta and Kai at Corquin, and did not go very long here. That's one of the like interesting things about this show. Very rarely do you have two complete non-finishes happening on a Dragon Gate TV show, but that's what we had.
And back to back, I mean, they were broken up by an intermission, but it was the same idea in two matches.
Right. So very quickly in the match, Johnny grabs Ultimo's mask and rips it clean off. No struggle, no back and forth, no referee trying to like stop him. He just straight up goes, grabs the mask, pulls it off, gets DQ'd, obviously. And Luis Monte comes out, storms out, essentially, steps right up to Valletta. And from there, a huge brawl breaks out. And it's Luis Monte who puts out the challenge, defending the Open the Dreamgate title against Johnny Valletta at Dead or Alive this year. Those are our three current matches we have for the first big show of Dragon Gate's year.
When Valletta debuted in January, I remember writing in my review, and this is when he was doing just the singles matches, the squashes that I was far more into than you were. But even then, I remember writing, I said, Dragon Gate did everything right. I would not change the way his debut was laid out at all. And still no one cared. And I was never sure they were going to be able to get over that hurdle where mechanically they handled Valletta as they should have. But the crowd, and this was a Corkin crowd, did not care. And I think they all deserve, as long as this Dreamgate match at Dead or Alive is not a total and utter abortion, I think they all deserve to pop some champagne and pat themselves on the back and feel good. Because the way that they have made Valletta a thing, the sirens during the entrance, the continued beating of the Green Boys, no matter if he's almost to the ring or if he's in the top row of the stands, and then the chaos that follows him into the ring. This could go down as some of their strongest booking ever, because of the Herculean leap that Valletta has made from January to what we presume he'll be at in May. The interesting thing with this match, and I broke this down in my review, Mike, it might be the single riskiest Dreamgate match in the history of Dragon Gate, because Monte is not Yamato. He is not Doi. He is not Susumu. He is not Mochi. For as good of a champion as I think Monte has been, especially considering how much I hated the way they put the belt on him, if he bombs here, he could be toast. This might be the heel act moving forward. They'll have to get the belt off of Monte. The main event scene will once again be unfortunately battered and beaten by a struggling champion. If it bombs in Aichi, there is a chance that Valletta loses any aura that he had. And I don't know, maybe their plan is to just write him off at Dead or Alive and have him ride off into the sunset. More power to him if that's the case. I think he's sticking around, but they have a real chance to completely neuter him and never get that energy back if they bomb in Aichi. There is a scenario in which Monte looks great and Valletta doesn't. And I think that's worth the risk because you want your Dreamgate champion to look like a dominant champion. And obviously, you know, I like Valletta, but he is not the guy that is going to be cashing checks for this promotion at any point in their future. And then there is the alternative, the, I would say, least likely of the bunch, but still a possibility, that it elevates Monte and it elevates Valletta. And it is a truly memorable, maybe not a great match, but a truly memorable match that helps both guys and helps the promotion. And I just don't think that's going to happen, but I am so fascinated by how this match is going to play out, how it's going to be laid out. And I am in awe of the guts it took to do this match.
Yeah, it's something where there's a lot to get into about this match, and I fully plan on us getting into it over the next few weeks, especially as we get closer to May 5th. But it's something where Dead or Alive has a propensity to have questionable Dreamgate matches. And it's something where this now instantly becomes the potential of being a very questionable match. I do think it's something where it is very interesting, the fact that Monte has had title matches against Madoka Kakuta, Shun Skywalker twice, Susumu Yokosuka, and then Johnny Valletta. I think that there's something to be said about those wrestlers. I mean, Susumu is the aberration there, but those are all three heavyweights, if not considered super heavyweight by Dragon Gate standards, and Susumu more of a, even considered, like, I consider Susumu a bigger guy than most other people on the roster. Would you say so?
I would say so.
So you've kind of, in a way, have set up like Monte with like these monster matches where I'm the thing, like right now where I'm most interested in 20 days out, case, this is really the potential for Monte to actually do some flying.
Oh God. Yeah.
And I would that's what I'm keeping my eye on, is to see if we're going to get to see, like, he's done a couple Taharas and of course, you know, his Super Tigre finisher, but I wonder how much they're going to kind of air towards that, because it's become now a trend that Monte, if he's not the smaller man in his Dreamgate matches, he is not giving up a lot of weight.
Correct. Yeah. No, this is fascinating because, I mean, when Monte came in, we obviously weren't fans of him, but the thing that really won us over was the fact that he had sort of turned into Mexican Claudio and that he could base for anybody. And you think about what he did with Kamei and with Jason and with babyface Shun Skywalker, let alone heel Shun Skywalker. He was the super base in the company, and we don't have that now in this match. We have instead him being the smaller guy. I'm curious if Valletta will be able to do the same that Monte has done for so many people. It's just a fascinating match. It's one of those where the result is not in question. They didn't need to have a barn burner Dreamgate match. Nobody's buying a ticket because of this match. They're all buying a ticket for the cage match and maybe the twin gate match. This is kind of the perfect match to do if you're not going to do Monte versus Kai. Mm-hmm. And I think this has way more juice than Monte versus Kai ever would.
Yeah, and it's something where I think that you put it, it's going to be probably, it'll be second from the top, but would not be, would not be stunned if it's actually put third at the top. That's happened before in this building.
No, I mean, look, you put the Twin Gate match on before intermission, and then you go to intermission, you come back with Monte and Volo. Well, I guess you got the cage match, so you can't do that before intermission. That's really interesting. I don't know now if you do Monte and Valletta before the cage. You almost wouldn't. You would want to, because that match would be weird.
You can't do this match as the main event. Like the
You can't do it as the main event, but I think you might have to. Well, if I was running the show, I would probably have this go on before the Twin Gate match. Because the Twin Gate match, no matter what, there's no way that doesn't land to some degree. Again, there's a huge risk factor here that this match just sucks. And it's bad, and it leaves a bad taste in people's mouths. And I would not want to go to intermission with that, even if the cage match is what it is this year.
Yeah, and that's why I think this match should be third from the top, basically. Like, you just... there's things that they might try to accomplish in this kind of match that might be a weird note to have people wait a half an hour for a cage to be built on, you know?
I would like to see them open the show with it. I don't know if they've ever opened the show with a Dreamgate match before.
I mean, I felt like there's probably like a Shima Cyber Kong one, man.
No, those went on last and those kept on going.
Those did not always go on last, not in this building.
Dead or Alive 2012? Or no, it was 2013. I think that went on last.
I thought they had a cage match.
No, I don't think in 2013 they did. Let me look real quick, because now I'm curious. Well, okay, here.
I thought that was KZ's hair getting cut.
That was the next year. That was the same show as Flamita Susumu.
Okay, no, that was 2014. Right, yeah.
So 2013, Dead or Alive. Let me look at this card real quick, because that was the Dragon Kid Ricochet match, and I think a really good Twin Gate match. I'm pulling up the card. Dead or Alive 2013. Oh, that was Tozawa. Shoot, it was 2012. My years are all off here. Hold on, let me find this.
Yeah, that's why I thought that 2013 was Mad Blanky Air Cyber Kong.
So Dead or Alive 2012 was Susumu and Kage versus Mochi Fuji and a twin. Dragon Kid versus Ricochet and a Brave. Doi Yoshino and Pac versus Horiguchi Kanda and Saito in a triangle gate, and then Shima versus Cyber Kong as your main event. And then 2013 was Shima and Tozawa, and then 2014 they brought back the cage match, and that was the KZ head shaving.
I forgot that they completely, Blood Warriors and Mad Blanky, moved away from the cage in Aichi. Huh.
Yeah, because and I don't know if this was because of the tsunami or not, but the cage match in 2011 was in Osaka, because that's the one where Yamato loses his hair.
Yeah, that was the one where everyone was like, okay, Yamato can't lose this again.
Yeah, because they did Mochi and Yamato and Aichi that year for Dead or Alive, where Red Shoes was the referee.
Yep, no.
It's one of the best Dreamgate matches ever.
Yeah, no, that one rocked, yeah.
I don't think Monte versus Valletta will be what Mochi versus Yamato was. I think it could be very good. Again, there's a chance, because Valletta is just such a unique force, I worry it's a small room act, which is not really a knock when you work Dragon Gate, because you're working a lot of small rooms. I worry it's a small room act. I worry that it could just fall very flat. But really, your baseline here, I mean, if you pull a 3.5-star match out of this, and both guys don't come away wounded, either in terms of momentum or literally, because it's Dragon Gate in 2024 and injuries can happen at any time, I think that's a massive win.
Yeah, and it's something where also, like, you're not going to be able to be as reliant on plunder because of cage match, too.
That's true. But, that's true.
So there's a lot of ways that this can go, and it'll be really fun to see how they get us to Aichi there.
It's one of, just to put a cap on that, it's one of the single most interesting Dreamgate matches they've ever booked. I mean, there are times where results are up in the air, and there are things that you just can't anticipate, but this by itself, just the match on paper, is one of the most interesting things I think they've ever done.
And I don't know if it's worth getting into this week, they finally get their monster title match.
Yeah, no, I mean, this follows a rich tradition of Akebono and Takashi Yoshida, obviously, and, you know, Brody Lee never got his Dreamgate match, but he was in the Dreamgate scene when he was there in 2011. There's a tradition of doing this, and I just hope that, you know, may God rest his soul, but I hope it's better than the Akebono match, and it has a very good chance to be better than anything that Cyber Kong ever did in the Dreamgate picture.
Yep, it's going to be a lot of fun to see what happens in that match in Aichi. Elsewhere on the Quark win. D-Courage and Daiki versus Gold Class and Ria Fuda. We both kind of were excited about this Tomokos. Daya won over Fuda with a DDDDT, but really the story of this is Kakuta managed to completely destroy Fuda with a hip attack.
I'm telling you, I am very proud of myself that over the last few years, I did not sell my Fuda stock. I think he could really, really be something. I see the arc here, and I wrote extensively in the review at voicesofwrestling.com during the Rey de Parejas opening match, the semifinals, about just the journey of Strong Machine J, because that match happened on his fifth anniversary, which, by the way, Mike, Strong Machine J has been wrestling for 5 years now. Do you feel like you're closer to death?
Man, it's the one that's really going to like get me reassessing things is Dragon Daya. And I know that one's coming out in 5 months.
Well, that'll be, he was the end of 2018, so we're 5.5 almost at this point.
I thought he was 2019. My whole concept of time is washed today.
No, apparently. He's 2018.
Okay, so I'm trying to think. Okay, then the one that's really going to make me hate myself is Estrella. Yeah.
Yes, no, the Estrella one, that's a scary thought, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, he's coming up on 3 years. I mean, I wonder if he'll be back for that.
That's a loaded question right there. But with Fuda, the reason I bring up Strong Machine J is I think you have a very similar arc there. And Fuda, unfortunately, did not have the hot start that Jay did. You know, you got to remember the first 3 or 4 months of his career, he was protected. He had the gimmick. He won the titles at Kobe World. That all made sense. I mean, he had momentum out of the gate. It was just the shoulder injury that prevented him from really having momentum from the middle of 2019 through the middle of 2022. It was a 3-year gap where he was floundering in the mid card and undercard and, you know, having shoulder surgeries. If Fuda can just figure out his health, I'm not worried about his charisma. I'm not worried about his look outside of, again, I think his hair is in his face, and that's a little concerning. I just really think that if he can stay healthy, he can figure something out in this company.
Yeah, and it's something where like he provides such a different kind of fun element to his kind of striking that the dimension kick, I think, is one of the coolest moves in Dragon Gate. Just like the idea of, oh, we should use the ropes in different ways. And that gives, and I think with Fuda, it's just, he just needs to be able to get that 6 months straight.
Yeah, it's just a matter of time.
And it was something with this Corican case, as we're wrapping this up, it was not just action from bell to bell and Dragon Gate's best, at least monthly show they've had in 5 years. It was even before the show even started, as Shun and Shuji Ishikawa, after weeks of teasing, came face to face, and they will be going at it at the Show Center show on April 18th, Case.
And that is a Lex-sponsored show they're in a battle royal together, right?
Yeah, so...
Is that the show Tanahashi's on?
Right, okay. Yeah. Yeah, so this happened last year. It's called Show Center. It happens at basically a home goods store. And they do like whenever there's like an opening of a home goods store, Dragon Gate has done the openings for them before. This time they have like Jushin Thunder Ligers doing a talk, doing an interview, Shuji Ishikawa, Hiroshi Tanahashi. I think this is the one that's in Kobe that's opening up, I believe.
That sounds right.
But yeah, so Shuji Ishikawa, who expect to see him around a lot, I feel like it's safe to say.
And I thought the angle was great. You know, we saw what Ishikawa can do against Shimizu. So I have no doubt that even at Ishikawa's, I would say, advanced age, he's somebody that has certainly fallen out of favor to me in ring wise over the last 5 years or so. But if he could go against Shimizu, he could go against Shun. And I think, you know, this is kind of one of those that I saw this coming from a mile away. They're both very, very tight with the Lek boss. And this feels like something that, again, there's that August Kobe show that if we have Jay on in the next few weeks, I'll try to get more details there because it's the TV personality that's booking that show. And that feels ripe for Ishikawa and Skywalker to have a singles match.
Yeah, and it's something where with Ishikawa, especially given his relationship with the Lek Corporation, I don't know if I don't read into it much more than... as long as the Lek Corporation's around, I feel like he might be someone making appearances. Kind of like when but before everything with Kano and Noah kind of became a little bit more standardized.
Oh, man. Wouldn't you like to see Kano back in the fold for just a little bit?
Yeah, apparently him and this tells you how much I care about Noah. Him and Kaito Kiyomiya, they were doing he fell in love with Kiyomiya like he fell in love with Minoru, apparently. Or like there was like a weird like team thing that they were doing.
Well, I can't speak to that, and I watched some Noah today. I would say this, worth your time, because I think it's wrestling you'd enjoy. The March 31st Noah show, they did Kiyomiya and Owa versus Kano and Awada, the Noah young boy. That tag match is awesome. And then they did the final, they built it as the final singles match between Kiyomiya and Kano on the Korakuen show on the 14th, which if you were Noah, I don't know why you would do that. That is like wasting a bullet that you could always go to. But I mean, those two don't miss together. That is the generational feud for Noah in this generation, and they delivered once again.
Oh, it was the April 11th match that Kano was building it up, saying that he was trying to get under the skin of him.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
It's like, I'm so happy with this roster. The current Dragon Gate roster, but I really do at times go, all right, what do we need to give up to get Kano and Alejandro here full time? You know, is it worth, let me throw this at you. If you were Noah and I said, I'll give you Kota Minora in a Dragon Gate Dojo kid for Kano and Alejandro, who says no to that?
Oh yeah, I'd take that. And
right?
I would go, I'd maybe toss in two if I can also get Eita to like maybe care.
I just pick a lane. I don't care which lane he goes down. Just pick a lane, because this is not working for me. He's not exactly doing the Naruki Doi. Hey, I'm a freelancer and I need to deliver to get more bookings.
No.
Boy. When's the last time Eita was even in Dragon Gate? I feel like I haven't seen him in forever.
Well, he got hurt.
But I thought he was back already.
I have not seen
Eita. He worked April 1st and then has been back on the shelf ever since. But we haven't seen him since the February Korakuen show when he beat Jason Lee.
That feels like a different world.
I've said it before. When he eventually officially retires, I don't know how we're going to sum up his career. It just feels like every 2 years with Eita since 2013 has been something so drastic and dramatic. And the public perception of him changes all the time. And I just really, I don't know if there's ever been anybody that I followed that has had a career quite like his.
Yeah. And even in a company that's known for having people like just like not achieve or like achieve and overcome like this, he's kind of like a unique entity in of himself. Like this isn't like a T-Hawk thing. Like it feels like completely its own thing. Weirdly.
No, unfortunately, it's like T-Hawk took the life that Eita had in 2020, and T-Hawk was like, well, 10 years into my career, I'll finally figure it out. I'll do it for a dying promotion, but I'll finally figure it out. And now T-Hawk is having some really, really high-end matches. I really want to see, I don't think it's out yet, but that T-Hawk-Lindemann 10-year anniversary match for Lindemann on that Strongheart show, that sounds excellent.
Yeah, it's something where as soon as it was never asked of him, that's when T-Hawk learned charisma.
When the lights were off.
Right,
when
yeah.
They weren't shining brightest, he figured out what he needed to do.
After that bulb kind of burnt out.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was the Korakuen show. It's strongest show that they've had in a long, long time. This weekend, they were... It feels like this was their busiest week that they've had of the year. There were YouTube stops in Kunamoto, Oita, as well as the Fukuoka doubleheader with the match that really kind of took us by surprise. But I want to spend some time on this one, Case. Captain's Fall between Natural Vibes and Z-Bratz on this afternoon. Part of the doubleheader. It's KZ, Shimizu, UT with Kamei as the captain for Vibes. Skywalker, Kai, Ishin, and Lee with Lee as the captain for Z-Bratz. One of the more fascinating matches they've done in a long time. And every time we see those four magical words, Case, we know we're in for it. And I feel like this match like was not very far from how good the Red Dead Parade House finals were.
I mean, this was just outstanding, and this is the sort of thing that I really feel like this promotion has gotten away from to its detriment, and it's a tough balance because, you know, to go back to Gleet for a second, you know, sometimes Gleet does these convoluted multi-man matches that feel very 2008, and it feels dated, even if I instinctually want to like it, they just don't land. But the Captain's Fall is something that absolutely should be back in the fold, and I thought the way they executed it here with all of the eliminations leading to the finish, this is, again, you know, the Corkin show is deemed, you know, nearly entirely essential, but you also have to pack on this Captain's Fall match. This is something that you have to watch before Dead or Alive.
Yeah, and it's something where the Captain's are Kameh and Jason. If you've not watched a Captain's Fall match, basically the Dragon Gate standard of it is you either eliminate everyone else on the other team, so if you're a Z-Brats, you have to eliminate KZ, Shimizu, or UT, or you eliminate the Captain. And that's how the match ends. And it kind of creates like this new kind of just element here where in the Dragon Gate style, the eliminations can come pinfall, submission, and over the top rope. And it just kicks off immediately with Shun and KZ teaming going over the top rope, where it's something where like they go immediately for it. And the early stages of the match is just, it defines everything very, very well. And these two guys, and it breaks down in a lot of different ways, and they bring it back together going to that first elimination. And as soon as Shun got that elimination against KZ, and the elimination that happened in the fashion where it was, it just completely like pulling KZ down and walking away, Shun completely understanding the assignment at that time.
Well, I feel like this is a promotion where the over-the-top rope elimination has been valued far more than in New Japan, because I really like, there was a Suzuki Gun LIJ match in Corkin a few years ago. It was right when Shingo came in, and I remember being so taken aback by it because it was like for the first time in a New Japan elimination match, the over-the-top rope elimination really felt like it mattered and that it meant something and that it wasn't just a cop-out. And it was like, oh, Shingo's in the match. I wonder why. And this was one where I felt like they were able to protect everybody that needed to be protected. They were able to eliminate guys and draw intrigue towards the finish, but it never felt cheap and it never felt like a cop-out. And if anything, it really only added to the drama of the match. So from all eight guys involved, I mean, this was another home run, and it ends with a Jason direct pinfall on Jackie where he does his new finisher, which is basically like a wrist clutch V-trigger. I think that looks great. I think the presentation of Jason right now looks great. He reminds me of Crazy Max era Makoto. The whole thing, just top to bottom, again, so worth your time.
I think that's almost selling the knee strikes short, calling it a wrist clutch Z trigger. What he really does is the person's out and he drags them kind of like upright just long enough for him just to plunge his knee into their face.
Yeah, I mean, look, we saw Jason experimenting with this for what felt like about a year and a half, because remember last year he was just wiping people out with forearms?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
This is an evolution of that.
And it's something where he hits it throughout the weekend. This is his finish. And he murders Ryo Tanaka in the evening session with it. And it really is something where they work this match around the concept of a natural vibes very quickly gets down 2-4, where it's UT and Kameh versus everyone else. And they are just scrapping their way back into it until Hyo comes out and causes Shun's elimination. And that's like the one moment where it feels like natural vibes is able to kind of get back to it. And then Jason, as soon as there's a distraction, goes low blow. Kameh is completely out. And then he picks him up, drags him, knees him as hard as he can in the face, and wins the match without even needing to eliminate the side.
I really liked Ishin in this match. I thought he was great. It's really encouraging seeing Ishin be able to work this style. Something this fast-paced where he can fit in. Again, he's really becoming Michinoku-era Dick Togo, where he has that size, but he also has that agility now, which I really don't feel like he had even at this time last year. I also, just in the interest of, hey, maybe there's some lapsed fans that heard some buzz and wanted to check it out, you know, one of the most enjoyable spots of this match is they trade the lariat trains, where Z-Brats, they connect with a bunch of lariats on Kamei in the corner, and then Vibes comes back. They hit Kai in the corner, and then they get the jackknife pinfall to eliminate Kai. I thought that was drawn up beautifully, and that felt like very, very old school Dragon Gate.
Yeah, everything felt very earned over the week, and I feel like that kind of was like showing the care up and down the show that really paid off there in the main event. Everything else, I really liked the Gold Class versus Yamato Doi Susumu six-man tag elsewhere on this show. This was something where you got more deep in Yamato and Minoura. And a question I had for you is, we look at how Dead or Alive is set up here. This feels like the loose end right now, Minoura and Yamato. I do kind of feel like it has to be a no ropes match. Do you see that happening? Or is this something where I feel like they're just going to let this simmer and maybe revisit this in October?
You know, I started thinking about Minoura a lot this week because it reminded me almost of like the Valletta debut, where it's like, well, mechanically, they're doing everything right with Yamato and Minoura. And it's why I can't quit the idea of, you know, maybe it's not a heel version of Masquerade like I talked about a few weeks ago, but I don't know. I like Minoura. This is the caveat. I like Minoura. If we have Yamato beat him in multi-mans for 6 months, and then he either wins, you know, Minoura wins at Kobe, or he wins in a no-rope match, you know, in September or October in Korakuen, I don't know. Do we feel better about Minoura? I don't know what to do with this now, because mechanically this was fine. I get what they're trying to do here. I like that even though he's not, you know, he's not in the title picture, I don't see him wrestling Monte anytime soon. I like they have something for Minoura, but I really am starting to wonder just what the long-term effectiveness of it is going to be.
It's something where I kind of, like, the more you watch the group and you watch how Gold Class kind of, how they operate right now, it feels like it's more than just waiting for Minorita. Like, it doesn't feel like that they're just like just standing in place. It feels like it's going somewhere, but the only way it feels like it can go is to breaking up the unit and a Minoura heel turn. Like, is there another way out of it? Like, I feel like you kind of like need Yamato to like pull that out of Minoura. And the one thing that he really has not done yet, which is usually your go broke, let's see what we have, is the heel turn. And I don't know, like now with the Jason turn, if it's even an effective thing to do for Minoura right now.
Well, the problem with the Jason turn, I don't think it creates any logistical issues for Minoura, other than now he is going to have to really be on his game if he turns, because we've seen Jason hit the ground running.
Jason's a two now.
Exactly, in a way where, again, you know, when Jason turned, we talked about just the history of heel turns and how long it's been since we've had one outside of Ishin, who took a lot of time to figure out what he was doing as a heel, and then Kato, who maybe that was partially more in-ring than it was character work, but it took Kato a minute. Jason has not had that. So if you're Minoura, who has perpetually felt like he's in a state of figuring it out for the last 3 years, if the heel turn is the solution, it can't be one of those things where he turns heel, it gets a mild pop, and then there's 3 months of him doing different things here and there to try to work through it. It has to be one of those things that works immediately, or it's, you know, it's pointless at that point.
Yeah, it's just something where we're getting to a point now with his feud, and especially against Yamato, he gets choked out here, that there has to be that step. And with how, at least I look at Dead or Alive right now, I don't think you're doing a no ropes match the same show you're doing a cage match.
There's no reason for it.
Yeah, exactly. There's no reason for it, and just like, why? So is it something where you're able to do that sort of match, which that is the match I feel like that they're heavily like kind of gesturing towards, without the idea of, oh, now we don't have the cage involved in this feud. It's all based on this match type that, with how Minoura figuring it out, maybe he responds to this and this match does it for him. Maybe we're back to where we are right now, where he's just going to the crowd and handing out roses because that's something that the crowd seems to like.
You know, it's odd. There's kind of two points I want to make here. One, I don't know why this would feel more important here than in Corkin, but for as not bullish as I am on the long-term effectiveness of this, I would like to see Minora versus Yamato in Gifu this year for King of Gate, where you know the same building where they did it last year with Minora and Yoshioka, where it was their joint homecoming show. I feel like that environment is way more interesting. Maybe it's just because I thought Minora was so awesome on that show last year that I'd like to see them double up again and do he and Yamato there. The other point I want to make before I throw it back to you is in relation to Minorita, hopefully we have an update on him soon. There's an autograph signing event, like a fan banquet, on April 21st, and it's Minora, Ben, Hulk, Hyo, Fuda, and Minorita at that event. So hopefully there we get some sort of update, because it feels like he's in the territory where he could come back any week now.
Yeah, and he's been doing things around the company. It's not been a mystery that he's been in rehab and doing Prime Zone things as well. I guess about Gifu, my one thing about that is if you're kind of doing that there and they always run it during King of Gate time, then you kind of have to keep it as the tournament. You're not going to be able to have the idea of the big Yamato blow-off match, I guess.
No, but I you know, you're thinking logically here where it's like, oh, you know what would be good for Minora to do the full-on Yamato feud experience? The problem is that every part of Minora's career has been illogical in one way or another. And so
that's fair. That's fair.
So him having basically a hometown match against Yamato, that might propel him far more than, again, it goes back to the point even on this Fukuoka show, mechanically they are doing everything right. And mechanically, it would make sense to do a no-ropes match in Cork, and that's what happens when you have a feud with Yamato. I just don't feel like you are going to get a ton of juice out of that if you continue to squeeze from that feud that way.
Yeah, that is a good point, because it is something where there's the company's willingness to keep on trying with someone up into a certain point, and then there is, like, at a certain point, it's flailing.
Well, I don't even think he's bombing right now. Now, look, it'll obviously aid him when Minorita comes back, but trust me, we have seen far worse versions of Kota Minora. I just, for whatever reason, I feel like this one's a little bit hollow right now, and I don't know where they can go to squeeze life into this. I don't know what the revival plan is. I don't know if they feel like they need to revive it. I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like I know where the beats are going and I'm not super invested in it.
Yeah. And I guess that's kind of where, like, you talk about overall in Fukuoka, you have that gold class versus Ultimo Dragon, Don Fuji, Yazushi Kanda match in the evening session, where it was all basically Minora getting his ass handed to him by Don Fuji, something that happened 7 years ago in a way, or 6 years ago, sorry, 2018, class 2018 there with him. And essentially got to a point where Ben just went, boom, spear on Kanda, I won, and just kind of walked away. Like, it's so weird at this point. Like, it's not flailing, but something is happening. And we've seen this happen so much with Minora that it's just, I'm wondering if they're doing the classic as I've suggested, or where it's going to go to. But it does feel like I would be surprised if we're still on these talking points on Gold Class in a month or so.
I think that's fair. In regards to the evening show in Fukuoka, I'll keep this brief because I have to run here in just a second, but I do want to highlight just how good Strong Machine and Mochi were. And it was really,
it was raw.
That's the perfect word for it. You're exactly right. And it was not only textbook Mochi, because it could have fallen apart in the sense, not of quality, but it could have delved into essentially a carbon copy of any Mochizuki destroys a young boy match. But the mm-hmm. wrinkle here was that Strong Machine J fought back, and quite honestly, he looked worthy of fighting back. I mean, he carried himself like a veteran on the roster now, like a guy in his position you would want to see him carry himself like. So it was a great match. I mean, I was near notebook on it. I thought it was 3 3/4 and just really, really strong all the way around. But it also, it was a really encouraging sign for Strong Machine J. And I don't think he's slowing down anytime soon. I don't think this is a guy who, leaving Rey de Parejas, that was the peak of his story here, and he'll be cycled down and we'll go from there. I really get the impression he will be involved in a Magic Kobe world that really matters. And I think that's really exciting because I think he's peaking at the right time. And I feel like they have something here as long as he continues to land the plane.
Yeah, it's something with that. I was 3 3/4 on this as well. I felt like this was the best thing on that evening show.
Yes, I agree.
A good margin, but Strong Machine J has, like, between this and the match he has in Oita against FTO guy, I would still say if you really enjoying what was put together with that case, find the time to watch that singles. The guy, it's like this, he kind of looks like the, remember the guy from Kyushu Pro who was more round than he was tall?
Oh, the was it that Kodai Nozaki?
Yeah. He's not Kodai Nozaki thick, but he's got kind of that scummy thickness to him about it. But the fun thing about Strong Machine J is he is showing a level of grit and just ability to just want to kind of go after it that it really it makes you go like, oh, yeah, no, I definitely now see him being Super Strong Machine Son now. Like in these matches, especially against Masaaki Mochizuki, who is more than willing to bring back Showa wrestling if you want him to. That's the feeling I get from Strong Machine J coming out of Rey de Parejas. Whatever's happening, natural vibes is going to happen. And the one thing that I'm pretty certain is that Strong Machine J is going to keep on doing Strong Machine J because he's figured it out.
It will be an uphill battle with the voting pool, but if the first quarter of this year has been any indication, this feels like the year that, at least on my ballot, Strong Machine J is going to have a pretty major presence in the SFM 50. And that is, for me, the perfect way to close it out is you've got this great no-hug stuff, you got this great big-hug stuff, you got a lot of things to like with Jason and Jackie and Shun and KZ, but you can't ignore Strong Machine J. Yeah, I think he is really starting to peak as a performer, and I really like the direction he's going.
Absolutely, and it's been a fun week for Dragon Gate, and it's going to continue. Okay, so I'm going to touch on this real quick. I know you got to go.
No, please run through it real quick.
Yeah, so we're in the Kobe Arts Center for a doubleheader this weekend. This is on Dragon Gate Network. What's most notable here, other than what all we have talked about, how they're doing Steel Cage preview matches up and down both these shows, including a 8-man tag in the main event of the evening session to a special 85 kilo and greater Royal Sambo. But the real meat, I feel like, on these shows are we are starting the class of 2024 off right. Dragon Gate Future Exhibition. We get two of them. Each member of the class will be in a match. We have on the afternoon session Hamari Kato and Akihiro Sahara. And then in the evening section, Dai Tsujiguchi and Koki Oshima. So four guys starting their career with exhibitions coming up this weekend in Kobe.
Let me tell you, these are some no-bullshit Kobe shows. You've got Hyo and Kamei in a singles match. You got Jason and KZ in a singles match. You have that 85-kilogram Royal Sambo, which I think is a great concept.
Guess who's
I'm
in
super
it?
Into that.
Ishin is now fully heavyweight.
So you're telling me he doesn't qualify for the Brave Gate belt anymore? You couldn't tell that just by looking at him?
I just like confirmation. I do a fact here.
That's just in the first show. And then the second show, Kai versus Strong Machine J, Yokohama Explode singles match, No Hug versus Mochi Fuji, and then an 8-man tag with Big Hug and KZ and Kamei versus a combination of Z-Brass guys there. I'm telling you, this is not Sambo Hall. It's the Art Center, because I assume Sambo Hall is booked this month. But those are some no-bullshit Kobe shows. I really like the way those look on paper.
Case, I know we have a different schedule next week, and we're shooting for a couple episodes coming up, and especially as we're getting closer to the hot season and Dead or Alive getting guests aboard here. But my one piece of homework for you for next week, we're just going to do this immediately based off of 5 minutes. Each of us, we have to pick our guys.
Okay, done. There's nothing I love more than overreacting to Dragon Gate rookies. I can very easily do that.
And that's what we have on the network, and we'll be back with you next week. Probably expect it Thursday and Friday in your podcast feeds, but be sure to follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. Case is at underscore in your case. I'm at Fuji Heya. Thanks for listening to Open Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week. Take care.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.